You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Interstate Batteries. From your truck to your trail camera and everything in between, if you have a piece of hunting gear or a piece of hunting equipment that needs a battery, Interstate Batteries has got you covered. You can go to a local retail store, or you can go visit online at interstatebatteries.com. They have thousands of local retail shops all over the U.S., so you can go there as well. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Woo!
1, 2.
This is the Hunting Gear Podcast, and just like the title implies, we cover all things hunting gear and equipment, from discussions with the top manufacturers to product reviews from past hunting experiences. Our goal is to provide you with reliable and unbiased product information in hopes of educating you on new products and assisting in future purchases. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and this episode of the Hunting Gear Podcast starts right now. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and always, I shouldn't say as always, because you're not on every episode, but Bob Polanik's here too. Bob, what's up?
How's it going, guys?
I'm doing pretty good. I checked my trail cameras for the first time this year, and I'm pretty happy with the results that I got. And that makes me just really jacked for the upcoming season.
I kind of follow you on social media there a little bit, and yeah, I saw you had some decent bucks come up. I was also listening to, I think, Mark Kenyon's podcast, Wired to Hunt podcast, and you have a 9-year-old buck.
Yep.
That is insane.
Yeah, I bet you I have 5 years of trail camera pictures of him. Maybe six. I'd have to go back and check, but I have, like, my trail camera organization is kind of spread all over the place. I had to move computers, so I had two computers with two different sets of years, and I still have yet to, like, transfer them all together into one, I guess, organized file. But yeah, and the crazy thing about this buck is I think he's 9 years old, and he's been maybe the highest he's ever been, maybe is like 145, the biggest. He's always been an 8-pointer with like a split brow tine. Maybe 1 year he got into, would get into the low 150s, 145, 150 as kind of a junk nine with just, you know, like a mainframe. He's like a basket eight, but he's got some junk some years. And 1 year, okay. 1 year is just a little bit bigger, but this year he's just, the bottom dropped out of him, and he's like a big 3-point side with a split brow and then a 8-point or 4-point side on the other side. It's just cool because his body's gigantic.
Right, right. So That's super. Like, that's got to be one of the more unique bucks to be able to hunt. I know he's kind of always been a ghost for you, and you've never really caught up with him during daylight. But
yeah.
What a rare animal.
Yeah. Yeah, especially getting to that, you know, I had this conversation with another guy a while back where, you know, big racks like that Boone and Crockett status, like 170 and up is rare, but also a buck getting to this 8, 9, 10-year-old status and looking healthy, right? His antlers have gone downhill, you know, the last couple of years, but just an animal to get that old and maintain, especially through the winters that we've had in the last 3 or 4 years here in Iowa, that just have been absolutely brutal, for an animal like that to survive is also rare. And it, to me, I'm just like, that is just as much a trophy to me as, let's say, a Boone and Crockett rack.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to, if you get a crack at him, you're going to try to launch an arrow through him?
Yeah. I'm not very optimistic about having an encounter with him, just for the pure fact that when this September hits, the velvet gets stripped, he sticks around for a couple more weeks. And typically when there's been years where he stuck around into October, but he's always been nocturnal, which tells me two things. One, I'm not in his core area. He bounces outside of his core area. I think I know where he lives, but I don't have access to hunt that property. So he's nocturnal when he gets to my farm that I can hunt. And then the second is when the crops come out, I don't even see him anymore until the next year. So he just goes somewhere else. He just summers on this farm and then he goes somewhere else.
Okay. Yeah, I got you. Well, cool.
Yeah. What about you, man? Have you got any cameras out in Michigan?
I do. So I've got three different properties that I hunt in Michigan. And actually last night I was on public land up by my house where there's really never been too much around for shooter bucks, I'd say.
Right.
And this year they, 2019, you can't bait in Michigan. So I used to always throw, you know, I had mineral stations going, kind of just an inventory thing in front of my trail cameras. So This year I've had to kind of get a little bit more strategic on just, you know, natural corridors, just heavily used runs and stuff like that. And I've put cameras up on old mineral sites just in case. But yeah, I checked four cameras yesterday up by my house on public land, where it's just notorious for just no quality deer around. And I was blown away to find three, like 100-inch, 110-inch, potentially 3.5-year-old bucks. I think there's a nice wide 7, a typical 8, and then a pretty decent 10. And I was absolutely blown away.
So that's a 3-year-old, 110-inch 10-pointer is good where you're from?
Northern Michigan, yeah.
Yeah,
you hear Mark talk about that every once in a while. There's just not a lot of nutrition up here.
Right.
I mean, there's plenty of ag around. There's no ag by me. It's all national forest. But it's all just like scrub oaks and pines and stuff like that. So they just don't get a lot of nutrition. And then the mentality in Michigan is very like, if it's brown, it's down. So there's just not a lot of deer around.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
do you ever hear stories coming out of Northern Michigan of like a slammer getting shot, like a booner?
Oh, yeah.
Or just like a freak that no one sees. And then all of a sudden he makes a mistake and gets shot.
Yeah. So there are those rare ones. I saw one further north than me, even. He had to have been like a, I think he was like a 170 or 180 non-typical up in like Charlevoix, which is far north, northern lower peninsula.
Gotcha.
I followed a buck. I think I had him on camera for 2 years. I think the year that he got shot was 2016. I think he was a 4.5-year-old. And he was in like it's called the Leelanau Peninsula. There's a lot of cherries and apple orchards up there.
Yeah.
But he probably had to be 145, 150, which is, he was like, I think he was a mainframe 10 with a kicker on his G2. I had a ton of pictures of him and then saw him posted on a
forum or something.
Facebook page called Michigan Buck Pole. And I was like, oh, come on. And then I had another one that, I found him on public land, but he was crossing like a major highway and going over. He lived on private and he would come over on public like every time they'd cut the alfalfa field. And he had to have been 155, I'd say, easily. And he had even been at least a 5.5-year-old. So
yeah,
we do get them up here. They're not super common, but we do get them. That's not like Iowa or Nebraska, Missouri. It's not like the Midwest where you can have 100 acres and you can put a camera out and have, you know, 4 or 5, you know, 130
right
inch bucks or bigger. So right. we just don't. It's not very common.
Right. And then let's see. So you're getting ready to take a trip somewhere, you were telling me?
Yes, sir. My vehicle is loaded with climbing sticks and tree stands and trail cameras, and I am headed to Nebraska tomorrow after work. So my buddy and I, we hunt a private farm in Nebraska that I've gotten permission on for the past few years, but it's right on the banks of the Missouri.
Nice.
And it flooded out big time. It flooded out big time this March to where we had to cancel a scouting trip or a shed hunting trip back in March because the whole farm was underwater.
So did they even get that farm planted?
No, they, from what I understand, they did not get the farm planted. It was too wet, all underwater in March. And then I guess it flooded out again for just like a day or two in late May. My contact out there did say that they're potentially going to plant some sort of cover crop, which like winter rye or something like that. Yep. But we have not heard if they've done that or not. And then, you know, getting a hold of the good old boy farmers to ask them whitetail habitat questions is not exactly, you don't always get a return phone call.
Right.
So we don't know what's going on out there. And we figured it's best if we just burn a weekend in August, get out there, see what's going on, maybe knock on some doors on some higher ground. Maybe we can get permission on another piece of property. But yeah, I do have 2 cameras that I've had out there since November of last year, and I have no idea if they were damaged in the flood. I mean, I had lithium batteries in them and 32 gigabyte cards, so they should have been fine to take photos all the way till I get out there this weekend. But if they got wet, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see.
What I've had a farm like that before, or my main farm that happened. So obviously they cut the crops in the fall, all winter goes by, it thaws out, right? It dries up. And then what happened was they went and they put fertilizer down. That might've even happened after sometimes they do it right after they combine the crops, they'll get back in there and they'll put fertilizer down on the ground, for the next spring. So it has all, you know, all winter to soak into the soil or whatever. I'm not a farmer, but what happened was he ends up, then it's a real wet spring and they don't get the river bottom planted. And what it did is it created weeds that were like 12 foot tall, and it was some of the best habitat that I've ever seen for deer. They were in that like crazy. And it just sucked them in. They were eating acorns. They were crossing this creek to a different farm for egg. But throughout the day, they were chasing does in that, and had a booner. Let's see. Yeah, I had a booner 10 that was in there 1 year that we were trying to kill. And it was so thick, you couldn't do anything in there. But so hopefully they stick around and something like that happens, as opposed to just flat, barren, no cover ground. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I kind of heard. So we hunted there for archery season in November of last year. Late November, the landowner sent me a text message. I think it's the only text message I've ever gotten from him in my entire life. And it said, "The 3 big bucks that you had on camera, combine farmer saw them, and everyone around the farm agreed to pass on them this year, to let them go to next year." And I'm talking, one of them was probably a 150-inch 10-point. Another one had to have been a 170, 180, 13-point.
That they're going to pass on?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why this. So this farm got nuked with EHD back in 2012. It was the same setup. 2011, big flood, whole farm flooded out. 2012, drought, all the deer are gone, and everyone's been, bitching and moaning about how the deer hunting sucks. And we go out there from Michigan, and there's 3.5 and 4.5 year olds running everywhere, and we think it's amazing, but they don't think it's high quality deer hunting. So they agreed to let all those deer pass. We also saw, my wife and I were out there, and we saw, like, I was filming her, and we saw 5 8-pointers that were like 3.5, maybe 2.5, 3.5. So that farm, we were just, we're just thinking, 2019, this place is gonna blow up. There was corn in there last year, and it's gonna be beans, and it always hunts really well with beans. Just because it pushes all the deer into the timber. And so we just don't know. Big question mark. I'm still very excited. I have had one buddy tell me that, what kind of what you were saying, it could honestly end up being the best year ever, depending on what happens with the weed growth and stuff like that. So.
That EHD can be some scary shit, man, and wipe out big populations. There's been reports of that here in Iowa, not in the county that I hunt or live in, thank God. I'm sure it's out there somewhere, but there's been reports in some other counties where they've been hit by EHD already. I don't think it's been near as bad as other years, but that's just me, reading very few news articles and whatnot, and guys on forums and Facebook groups and stuff like that saying, hey, we got it reported here and whatnot. But it doesn't sound like it's been as bad as years where my stepbrother went out. I don't know what he was doing out there on a farm one summer, and they counted 22 dead deer in one pond.
Oh,
22. That's
that's awful.
bananas. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's yeah, what a it is what it is. But all right, this is the Hunting Gear Podcast, so we should probably talk about hunting gear. I want to change the topic just for a little bit. Eventually, we're going to start talking about boots here. But I want to ask you if you've made any hunting gear purchases recently.
Just a couple tree stands.
What are you running for tree stands?
Everything I can get my hands on for in
Cheap.
the $60 to $70 range.
Gotcha.
So that camo fire site I was talking about on the last episode, that they have a bunch of decent muddy hang-ons available for like half off or 30% off or something like that. But you can only buy one at a time. Like, you can put five in your cart, but when you go to check out, they'll only let you buy one. I don't know if it's like a shipping thing or what.
Well,
Cause...
they're trying to save that deal for everybody.
You're right.
Huh. Wow.
Yeah. So, but yeah. So yeah, I run the big game, like the $40 big game hang-ons, the muddy ones. I do have a few lone wolves and the climbing sticks, but that's typically for, when I'm going out to like Nebraska, Iowa, and get, super mobile, and I have a week straight to hunt, and I'm always bouncing around. But I think hunting, I bought my wife some Sitka gear for our elk hunt that we're going on in a few weeks. But
So, let's see. My recent purchases are I bought boot gaiters, a pair from Kennetrek. I think that was, I did some research, and that seemed like it was the best value and price and quality all kind of wrapped into one. So I went with those. I bought a bugle tube that for for my elk hunt. And so my kids are playing in the backyard, and I'm practicing my bugle tube, and my neighbors have got to hate my guts right now, because it's just I'm screaming and trying to learn how to chuckle. So it's if there was anybody who knew what they were doing, it probably sounds absolutely horrible. For my calling, but I'm trying to practice to get it. So I bought a bugle tube, and then here's this: every once in a while, it's time to make a big purchase, right? And so I needed another base layer top, something somewhat lightweight, something that had some multifunction, you know, for out west and on the tree stand and, you know, just kind of in my mule deer hunt, you know, being active, but also at the same time being able to use it while I'm sitting for my, you know, my rut vacation or whatever. So I bought this hooded sweatshirt from Sitka, and it was the Apex hoodie.
Oh yeah.
And it's $200, I think, it after taxes and shipping it to my door, it was like $225 for a hooded sweatshirt, right? And mm-hmm. I put it mm-hmm. in my cart, I bought it, and I'm just like, oh my God, I just spent $200 on this thing. And it's almost like you get a little bit of this buyer's remorse, or you feel like you got swindled or something. You yeah. know what I mean? Like,
oh yeah.
And so I got it. I tried it on, and it's awesome, right? It's merino, mm-hmm. and this like, and a different fabric on the shoulders, but most of it's right. a merino base layer, and it's going to do the job. It's going to be great. It's going to, I know it's going to perform, you know, because all my other Sitka stuff in the past has performed, but it's just that thing. Like, I save up all year. I budget a certain amount of money for my hunting gear and equipment and my tags and my, you know, my trips. And you take a big chunk out of it for one item. It's almost like a punch in the face, as if that makes sense.
Oh yeah. It's, well, it's when you're buying it, it's like yeah. an adrenaline rush. You're kind of sitting there like, rubbing your hands together, like, ooh, I get this new piece of gear. Can't wait to get my hands on it. And then you buy it, and then you sit there and you're like, well, there goes $200. And
right.
I don't actually have anything to show for it right now. Right. And yeah. I mean, you get it and you feel better at least. Yeah. So but that's a great piece, man. I live in that thing when I elk hunt for a week.
Oh, you got it.
Yeah, a lot of times I'll wear a lightweight merino underneath it.
Okay.
And then I'll wear that on top of it. And it just depends on the weather.
Yeah.
And then if it's even warmer, I'll shed that and I'll just wear my straight merino. But that thing, when you're busting through brush, because the bottom of the arms and the shoulders have that different fabric, it just doesn't get like hung up. Yeah. It doesn't get hung up on all, like, you know, all the short stuff. So
yeah,
that's a great piece. And then the way that the pockets, like the pocket on the belly of it, the way that has like its own integrated pockets, that's super nice. Great piece. Yeah. Love that piece.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I can tell just by looking at it, I tried it on. It's very comfortable. It fits well. And at the same time, you just, from looking at it, it's just like the stitching and it's built really well. But I'm going to start doing a little bit more research on other companies and brands that are out there that may be direct to consumer, like Akuyu, and stuff like that, because I don't know, like, I just feel that $200 is a lot of money. I know it's going to perform, but I feel like there's gotta be something else out there that is from the same standard or the same quality. Right. I mean, but cheaper, like a lot cheaper.
Oh yeah.
There's got to be.
Yes.
Because, yes, you definitely. Know, Sitka's a retail, they have, you know, they're a retail company, and their branding and marketing is like premium too. Right. So,
right.
I don't know, man. I feel like you're paying for that. You're paying for the retail margin, obviously. And you're also paying for the marketing in that as well. That's all like kind of wrapped up into it. And, you know, they probably, you know, it worked. I bought it, right? Whatever they're doing, it worked. I ended up purchasing it, and, you know, I'm going to purchase more Sitka gear in the future, but I don't know. There's just something about, I come from a fam, like, man, I come from a broke ass family when I was a kid. So every dollar that we spent mattered. And my wife absolutely hates me for that. Yep. So, I don't know. Is what it is, though.
I hear you. My wife kind of came from they budgeted their money very well. And both her parents retired early and stuff like that. And they don't live high on the hog at all.
Yeah.
And then my folks, they were divorced when I was young.
Yeah.
My mom
here.
Was a cashier at a grocery store. And then my dad was like a general manager at a business. So my dad kind of lived middle class, and my mom was I don't know, lower class, I guess I'd say, bless your heart. But, and I lived with my mom, and then you go to dad's house and it's like, you know, a little bit nicer place. So you see both,
right,
both ends of the spectrum. And, with that, it turned me into someone who I'd rather go without something until I can save up the amount of money to have, right, to buy it once and be done.
Right. Facts.
So,
yep.
Yep.
And that's the thing, like, so, and eventually we're going to get into boots, but I got to ask you one more question, because I'm the kind of guy who not only do I say all this, but I like to have some of the latest, greatest tech or equipment or, you know, pieces of clothing or whatever. How often do you recycle your products? And I mean, like, either sell an old garment or an old bow so you can pay for a new bow or get the latest and greatest arrows or broadheads, or are you the kind of guy who keeps something for a long period of time?
I sell and continuously, yeah, upgrade. So, yeah, that is a requirement from my wife. It's also just, I don't need to stockpile, you know, a whole bunch of stuff. But I mean, I think 2014, I wore full blown Sika gear, and then I heard that they were changing their pattern in a year or two. So I offloaded all of it. And then I bought all Cryptic gear. And then I liked that, but I remember liking, for whitetail hunting, I liked the Sika gear better. So I sold all my Cryptic gear and then went back to Sika. So yeah. And same with like a lot of like photography equipment and stuff like that. I'll buy and sell lenses, always, you know, a lot of times selling stuff and buying something new. I don't know, it helps pay for it. So,
yeah. Yeah. See, yeah. I'm a sucker. I give a lot of stuff away. I give my dad all my old, or my stepdad, all my old camo. I've given bows to guys who, you know, like, I'm doing my part to try to help get other people into hunting by giving, right, them some free, you know, some free gear. But all right, let's talk about boots. All right. We got to do a hard cut here. All
right. Right. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Boots. All right. So boots are one thing. And, you know, we had this conversation about gear and clothing, right? And this evolution where we, you know, we started with basically cotton jeans or Carhartt overalls, and now we're into some more higher end stuff like the Sitka gears, the Cryptex and whatnot, something, you know, more hunting focused. Why don't you talk to me a little bit about your boot game back in the day?
As far as whitetail tree stand hunting, I've always been a rubber knee high guy, scent control type of thing. Also, if you do want to throw a little doe PP on your boots, if they're,
I was that guy. Rubber. I used to be that guy, dude.
Dude, I still do it from time to time, and I'm not going to lie. I've definitely shot a buck in the last, like, 3 years because of it.
You think so?
I'm fairly certain.
Okay.
I don't know. Okay. I don't know.
I step in – I purposely step in cow patties on the way to my tree stands. That's my cover scent with a little nose jammer.
Yeah.
That's my cover scent.
Yeah, I do like nose jammer too. But so, yeah, I started with that. With the problem with – most of those rubber knee-high boots is you get one season out of them and then they crack, you know, where your foot, right, bends, and they leak, and they're, I don't know, $150 to $180 for one season.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty big bummer. I have had luck with the Lacrosse over Irish Setter. Irish Setter's got like this Rutmaster boot, and the ankle on it is so tight that you have to sit down and with both hands rip the boots off your feet.
Oh boy.
And that was with like nothing, like no layers jammed like in the leg of the boot, you know?
Right.
And I read a lot of reviews on it, and a lot of people had that same problem. So I don't know if they've corrected the issue. That was probably two, three years ago. It was the Rutmaster 2.0s.
Yeah.
Not to single a specific product out, but it is a gear podcast. So yeah, I've had good luck with Lacrosse And then for elk hunting, I have really struggled to find a good pair of boots until just recently. I went through a pair of boots each season. I was wearing Merrells just because it's like it's a middle of the road option.
Yep.
And they never last more than one season. Between the training you do to get ready for the season and then the actual hunt, they've just ended up failing me by the end of the hunt. I know 2017, I elk hunted in Idaho in September and it snowed for the whole week.
Yep.
And I was lacing up frozen boots in the morning, because the waterproofing on them just broke free. And on the second to last day, the heel of the boot was legitimately coming apart on me.
Man.
On a backcountry elk hunt when you're 5 miles from a vehicle.
And that was with your Merrells. Merrells.
Yeah, that was. Yeah, that was. Okay. Merrells, Merrells, whatever.
Yeah, I don't even know how to properly pronounce it. Man, we're horrible at this podcast thing. Like, we're talking brands and we can't even pronounce them right.
Right.
But I get you, man. I had the same exact experience with a pair of Merrells. Like, it wasn't a backcountry hunt, but I wore them working landscaping, which is kind of intense, right? So maybe that boot is made for just trail hiking and not necessarily going off grid type, you know,
right?
Going bananas out in the backcountry. It's just like, right. Okay, if you want a really good pair of boots. Now, don't get me wrong. They were comfortable. They were very comfortable.
Yes, boots. Yes, exactly.
But yep. It's like that heel, the heel came apart on them, or the sole started to rip. And I wore them during my archery season 1 year, and they were, I didn't really have to walk through a ton of water but what happened was they're only good up to a certain temperature. Then you got to go to a bigger boot.
Right. So yeah, very true.
All right, go ahead. Keep going.
So I finally got so fed up with it after 2017 that 2018, I bought a pair of Crispies. Mm-hmm. All the reviews on them were fantastic. I know a lot of, and I can't believe I'm about to admit this, but a lot of social media personalities were wearing them. And,
you sucker.
They were reviewing them very well. So, but I've had them for a year, since early 2018.
Yep.
I've done a lot of hiking on them. I use them. I wear them every time I'm doing any scouting, any tree stand work, anything on my elk hunts. And I'm actually wearing them right now. And they obviously look like I wear them, but they don't look much older than, a month old out of the box. So, and right. They're a year and a half old, and they probably have got to have at least 150 miles on them, if not more.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So,
and no blisters, they're still waterproof.
Yeah.
So that's a purchase that I'm happy that I made.
What brand or what, style of Crispy?
It's the Summit. So I think it's one of their lighter options, and, it's not insulated. So
let's see here. I'm going to go to their website real quick. So is it a leather boot?
I think it's like that Cordura.
So it's green
material. Yes.
Yeah. I have the same exact boots, dude.
Okay.
Yeah.
You like them?
The Thor GXT or GTX?
No, these are the Summits.
Summits.
The Crispy Summits.
Okay. I have the Thor, I think. Yeah. What'd they cost you?
I think I found like a 10% discount code for Black Ovis, and I think I paid like $280 for him.
Okay. Yeah, that's
which is
right along where I paid. It was like $320 after tax.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Yeah, I bought them at a Scheels in Iowa.
So, okay.
So it's I like to buy my boots and some of my clothing from an actual place so you can go on and try them on and walk in them and all that stuff. So you like those Crispies then? You found something that you feel is good.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. What about then on the So you're sticking with your lacrosse boots for your colder weather type hunts?
Yeah, and I'll say, so I'm on my, this will be my third year on those, and I am willing to bet that they're probably going to spring a leak at the worst time, probably November 1st, and I'll probably have to be looking at breaking in a new pair. But so they're 800 gram thinsulate.
Yeah.
And when I first got them, I mean, they were toasty hot, but I think just like my feet sweat and like just, you know, always having like, if you wear two pairs of wool socks, just all that extra pressure in there, I think that thinsulate gets compressed and they just don't retain heat as well. I kind of noticed that towards the end of last year.
Yeah.
So I think it might just be time to get a new pair, just to kind of re-up the heat factor of them for when temperatures do drop. But yeah, the first year I had them, I could not believe how warm my feet stayed in the tree stand.
So what were, was that the Alpha Burley Pro or what was, what that, what boot was that?
Yes, it was. Okay. That's the Alpha Burley Pro.
Okay, cool.
800 gram. Yeah, I think they make a 1200 gram, but that seemed a bit overkill.
Yeah. Which I'll be honest, man, for some reason, if you were going to single out a part of my body that if it gets cold, I give up, it's my toes, man. I don't know what it is. I've tried just about everything. I wear the Alpha Burley Pros as well. With, you know, once I've tried the one sock, method where hopefully that air keeps it warm. I've tried the, you know, the two or three sock method, you know, no matter what, if you're not moving, that cold is going to get to you at some point. And like I mentioned in the other podcast, when we started talking, you know, when we were talking about clothing, once my feet are cold, I either have to move and walk around or go back to the truck. Cause I don't know. I'm a big pussy when it comes to my feet.
I hear you. I'm a big pussy when it just comes to being cold.
So, period.
Right. I've always told people I would rather it be 90 degrees and it be miserably hot.
Right.
Because if you're hot, you're just uncomfortable. You're cold, it is painful.
Yes.
It's painful.
Yes.
So.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. So let's see here. Any other type of boot that you've done in the past that you liked or disliked for any real occasion?
Not hunting related, but for work, I've been wearing Red Wing King Toes for 10 years and absolutely love them.
Is that a steel-toed boot?
It is.
Yeah. Okay. So with that said, that's a perfect transition because I used to wear my work boots for most of my hunting career. I was wearing a pair of Rockies, work boot with a steel toe in them, or let's see, what was the other one? What brand did you say?
Mine were the Red Wings.
Okay, I never had Red Wings, but let's see, Rockies or Wolverines. Yep. They had some, and then I just wear a big sock, like a couple thick socks under. So my feet were just crammed tight in there, right? So I would, when I was working in a factory or when I was, you know, working construction or landscaping, most of the time I had a work boot, steel toed, whatever. And when it came hunting time, because I was broke, that's what I hunted in. And my feet were getting cold a lot. And I probably tried to tough it out for far too long to where you get to the car, you throw the heater on, you blow it on the defrost mode straight on your toes. And it just like, as they started to warm up, it was painful. I mean, it was painful to warm the toes up. And, so eventually I ended up going to a hiking boot, right? Which was, or I kind of did two things at the same time. One was I went to a muck boot, which is basically just a chore boot. With, yep. I don't even know if this had insulation, but what it did was it kept my feet dry. I say that with an asterisk because, you know, because it, the muck boots did a good job of keeping water out, but you know, as a rubber boot, they're not really breathable. So the moisture stays in the boot with the muck boot. And so I had to ventilate by rolling the tops down and getting some fresh air in there, and that kind of defeated the purpose for sacrificing dryness for, because once your feet gets wet, game's over, right? The cold's going to eventually sneak in if your feet are sweating. So eventually, I remember even one season I was using one pair of boots to walk into the stand, my hiking boots. And then when I get there, I put my muck boots on, or, you know, I have a pair of Alpha Burly Pros as well, but put my muck boot on because it was dry. My feet were dry from the hike in, and then eventually, you know, but still that on a rubber boot, typically, especially not one designed, because back then muck wasn't really designing anything for hunting. So
right.
I had my feet were just getting sweaty, and you know, that defeats the purpose. Even when I was wearing a merino sock, a wool sock, you know, that merino's good if on the back end of that sock, that moisture has somewhere to go. But the moisture doesn't have anywhere to go, so it's sitting in there regardless of what the fabric is of your sock, right? So I found that, you know, the mucks had a certain use, right? If it's wet early season, that's probably all I'm going to use it for. But when you get into colder conditions, then I kind of switch to the Alpha Burly Pros that I have. And this is what sucks about a rubber boot, I feel. I have an insulated pair, and climbing up a tree stand in a big, thick pair of boots, I don't care what kind of tree stand you have, it sucks. Whether you have a ladder stand or whether you have, like, I do a ton of mobile hunting, run and gun. And I don't care how long the stick or the peg on the stick is, it's not big enough. It's crazy. Like, the boots are just so bulky and big, but they keep my feet warm a little more. So, you know, it's a give and take.
Yeah. Yep. Just, maintain 3 points of contact, man.
That's right.
That's all you can do.
That's right. So I do that. And then, and that pretty much gets me through the winter or through the late, even into the late season. You know, yeah, there's a little bit of moisture trapped in there because it's a rubber boot, but I think that the Alpha Burly Pros do a real good job of have a little bit more ventilation than, let's say, like the muck boots that I was using.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
Let's see. So then.
I agree.
Yeah. So like I said, at the same time I got into a pair of muck boots and rubber boots was the same time I picked up a pair of Merrells or Merrells or whatever the hell they're called. And so I picked a pair of those up when I was doing my landscaping, working, you know, for landscaping guy. And then that transitioned into early season. I wore those during early season. And then I went out west a couple times, and I wore those boots as well. But then like, I just noticed that the sole, everything else seemed to stay where it was at. It was a non-insulated pair of Morels. But the sole, like you said, just kind of started coming apart. It didn't. I think I had them for 2 years. And I don't know about you. What do you expect a pair of boots to last when you buy them, regardless of the price?
Regardless of price?
That's a good question, though, because I literally forgot my boots out. At my home here when I went down to my main farm to check trail cameras. So I went to Walmart and bought like a $25 pair of boots, and they literally lasted maybe a day and a half. And now they sit in my garage and they have a whole hole in there. Right. So, take that with a grain of salt. How long?
To make it easy, let's say like your average, you know, your mid-grade, you know, if you're spending $100 or more on a pair of boots, right, it should be lasting you, in my opinion, 2 to 3 years.
2 to 3 years.
You would think. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So
what do you think?
Yeah. Like, again, kind of going back to the conversation I had about the Apex hoodie, right? Like, I spent $200. I should have that garment for a long time. But I also know that I beat the shit out of my equipment, right? Mm-hmm. And yes. I am hard on it, not only, you know, everything. And so I think that for $100, you should get a year out of a pair of boots, depending on, you know, what the application is for. So like an Alpha Burley Pro, a bigger boot, a rubber boot that's heavily insulated that you're only using for wintertime, you're not using that boot in the spring, you're not using it in the summer, you're not using it in early fall. So I expect something like that. And even though, I don't know, what's the Alpha Burley cost? Full disclosure, I got it for free because Lacrosse is a sponsor of the Sportsman's
nice,
Nation.
Nice.
Right? So I think they're like
two. So if those boots only
$250.
So if those boots only last like a week, it doesn't matter.
Right. For me, but you know, right. I got it for free, but when I buy a pair of boots, cause I bought my Crispies, right. They were over $300. I expect those and I use them. I'll be using them a lot. I use them whitetail. I use them out west. I beat the shit out of them. I expect that to last 2 to 3 years for that price point. At the same amount of abuse, right? But on an Alpha Burley Pro, something that is expensive, that is I would say 5 years out of that application, if not more, because I'm only using them really two to three months out of the year. You know, when I start shed hunting, I'll wear those boots, you know, just if there's a lot of snow on the ground.
Right.
So I don't know. It just depends on the application and especially if you're spending $300, cause I have the pair of Crispies as well. And that's what I eventually, you know, I went from my Morels. I think I had another hiking boot. I can't remember what it was. It was middle of the road, probably to that $100 price point in 2014. I wear those for a couple years. Then I didn't do any Western hunts. So I stuck with my early season work boots. And then I had my Mucks as well. So that lasted me. And then the Alpha Burley Pros came into the picture. So then I started going on my Western hunts again. So I started looking for a new boot. And that's when I decided to go with the Crispy, through reviews, through trying them on. And I don't know. Just overall feel. They're a very comfortable boot. And I don't think they say that there's not a huge break-in period. Like you can put on a pair of Crispies and just start wearing them, if that makes sense.
Yes. Yep.
So
did you have that with your Crispies? Did you have any break-in period with them or no?
Well, I bought them in the summer before the hunt and I used them to train and check trail cameras and I wore them around the house. Like what I do is when I buy a pair of boots, I try to get them in the summer and then I'll break them in by mowing the yard with them. So I'll wear them while I mow the yard or while I'm training. Like I got a pack with some weight on it and then I'll use it to train. And then that way it's fully broken in by the time, by the time the whatever hunts I have come up.
Right. 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 Yeah.
So
I hear you.
The Crispies, I mean, they last and I don't know. I'm kind of all over the place here, but so kind of going back to the original question of how long, if I'm spending $100 on a pair of, I guess, early season hiking kind of general boot, I would probably expect $100 to last me a year. If I'm going up to that $300 mark, I'm expecting it to last maybe 2 to 3 years. If I'm buying a big bulky winter boot like the Alpha Burley Pros, I'm expecting that to have a longer lifespan because I'm just straight up using it less.
Yeah. Yep.
So
I hear you.
Yep. So then
I would say, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to talk about, fit a little bit. I just with the Crispies, it seems like a lot of reviews that I read and even for me personally, I have a wide foot and a lot of reviews I read definitely commented about how wide the toe box is on them.
Yeah.
And so if you have a wide foot, it's Crispies definitely going to be something you want to look at.
Yeah.
I have my elk hunting partner. he's been wearing the same pair of, I believe they're Las Sportivas.
Yeah.
And that he's had those for like 5 or 6 years and he still wears them. But that he said they're, he's got a narrow foot and he said it's definitely a narrower boot.
Right.
So yeah, those are just some things to consider.
Right. Let's see. So my, I don't know, this happens with all of my shoes and all of my boots. And it maybe it's because of the way my foot is or my heel is, but even if they have the heel lock laces, for some reason, when I'm active, I can never get a pair of boots, I don't care what brand it is, to lock my heel in tight. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, yeah.
And so even when I was on this last year's elk hunt, I didn't get any blisters. I was feeling very, you know, the boot was comfortable. But when we start walking downhill or side hilling, my heel, I feel like my toes are coming way into the front of the boot. And I don't know if I'm not lacing it up right. I mean, I looked into it, asked other guys who have the same boot. They tell me to do it how I had it. And I don't know. It's not just a Crispy. It's all boots that I have this problem with where I can't. And then if I try to wrap it too tight to make the heel like forcefully stay in, then it's uncomfortable somewhere else on my foot, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I don't want to tie it too tight for fear of getting a blister. But at the same time, I hate it when I'm going downhill and my foot's just sliding to the front of the boot.
Yeah, I don't. I hear you. I have the same exact issue, even to the point where I've gotten blisters on the front of my toes
from that.
From going downhill, from my toes being jammed in the front of the boot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. That's usually with a heavy load on. I will say that it's usually with like, yeah. And at that point, if you have a heavy load on, most likely you have a dead animal.
Which at that point, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, who cares? Yeah.
If you exactly. kill an elk and you're packing right. it out and you get the blister, man, that's all good.
Yeah. Bring it on. Bring on the blisters. Yep.
Right.
Exactly. I'll pay that price.
That's right. Because blisters will go away.
Exactly.
Cool. So anything else like from a standpoint of what you're actually looking for? Now we've talked about what we've used. What are you looking for in a boot? Let's start with a Western boot.
That I'm just looking for, I don't know the exact name of the material, but it's the bottom inch that goes all the way around your boot. I've noticed Crispy has it. I think Kennetrex have it. But that initial protection all the way around the bottom, that's going to be like your higher strength material. So they don't break down. And then I'm looking also at kind of stitching, where the stitching comes together to kind of figure out if there's going to be like wear points on the boots.
Yeah.
That's something I consider. And then basically the weight of them. That's why I went with the Crispy Summits. I think they're the lightest option you can get on the Crispy line. And then I just always want to make sure they're waterproof as well. Yeah. So,
yeah.
And I don't, for a Western hunt, because I'm always hunting in September, I've never gone with an insulated hiking boot. Maybe if I was hunting in October, I would, yeah. And I would still only go lightweight, only like a 200 gram.
Yeah.
But I like that year that I hunted in Idaho in the snow, as long as you're moving around and my feet stayed warm. My boots froze overnight cause we were sleeping in a tent. And you had to lace up frozen boots in the morning.
Yeah.
But you get moving and after 20 minutes, your feet are finally warm again.
Yeah. But, wet, but warm, yeah. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So anything else as far as what you're actually looking for in a hiking boot or a Western style boot?
No.
Are you like a high ankle support or just a low ankle support? Does soul matter to you? The soul, like what the tread looks like?
No, tread doesn't really bother me too much. I don't worry about that too much. I do like a softer boot. That's for sure. I don't know that I have tough ankles or anything like that, but I've never had an ankle injury in my life. And I do a lot of, like wet wading in the summer on rivers. And, you know, you're always stepping on, you know, gravel bars and, you know, underwater logs and stuff like that. And there's many times where I've thought to myself, I should have rolled or sprained an ankle and I haven't. So I do like a softer boot just because I don't really need a stiff boot for that ankle protection. With that said, I do have like the 6-inch. It's not the high boot, like the high ankle boot. It's your just your average. I don't know if it's a 5-inch or 6-inch ankle, but that's just what I wear.
Right.
So
yeah, I'm definitely the kind of guy who's looking for something that's 8 inches. Or a little higher. I need it to go above my ankle. I don't know why. I think it's just a support thing. I've never done, let's say, one of my training sessions in a lower than 8-inch boot or my tennis shoes, or I've done it in my tennis shoes once, and just walking up a hill with very little ankle support, I'm thinking about it. It doesn't hurt, or I don't feel uncomfortable, but I'm thinking about it and I don't want to think about it, if that makes sense. I want to just have it covered. So I'm looking for something that's 8 inches or taller. I got some friends who go all the way up to the bottom of their calf, like a really high boot.
Yes.
I don't know if I'd feel, I've never even looked at them. I've never considered a boot that high. Maybe if I was going into some kind of snake country. But in Colorado at 10,000 feet, I don't know. There might be snakes. I doubt it. You know, there's not a lot of rattlesnakes there. If that makes sense. So I'm looking for 8-inch boots. I'm looking for, you know, a quality sole. You know, I don't really care what the tread looks like, but I want it to be somewhat aggressive. I don't want it to be too smooth because, you know, that is what's touching the ground on some of these really steep climbs and descents, right? So I want to make sure I have a really good tread on the bottom of the boot. I'm looking for something that's Gore-Tex waterproofed, right? Something that's going to, you know, if I have to cross a creek or if I have to walk through some wet grass in the morning, I don't want to get soaked. And I think in a combination with my boots this year with a gaiter, I should be even better off than I was last year, right? Because we had to walk through a lot of wet grass last year and because it would rain and then we'd move and then the bottom of my pant would get wet and it just kind of finds its way of working its way up your body. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I think in a combination with the gaiters, I'm going to find a little bit more dryness there. And then I mentioned the ankles, but a boot that has, ankle laces, you know, so on my Crispy, I can go all the way back and really lock that heel in as tight as possible. Right. I'm still getting some slide in there. I'm still getting in, like I said, that's with any boot I've ever tried on or I've owned. I'm still getting a little bit of heel slide, but I want the option to tie the heel and the ankle in really tight, have really good ankle support, you know, for when we do or when or if I ever do kill an elk or have a big pack out or pack in or whatever. I want that support. And like you said, the toe box is important because if you don't have that room in there, I think that's where the blisters come from. Just your foot has to be tight around the ankle and I don't know, the first couple inches of your foot, but the toes almost need to be free. If that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense to me. That's exactly how I wear my boots as well. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And then there are some other things like, you know, I think Crispy, they have some of them have a Vibram sole. Some of them don't. I don't know if that necessarily matters to me. I know Vibram's, is it Vibram? Vibram. That's a company that just makes soles.
Right.
Right. Yep. So and then they put them on a variety of different boots. You know, I don't think that matters to me. Like I said, that pair of Morels that I had, I think, had a Vibram sole on it, and it still fell off. So it may have. I don't know. Anyway, like I said, Gore. And then I just want it to be able to take a beating, right? It has to look like it's put together well. I've had boots before where, let's see, I have a pair of Pronghorn boots that I wear early season, and from Danner. Was it Danner? Yeah, a Danner.
Yeah, it'd be the Danner Pronghorns for sure, yeah.
I have a pair of those, and I wear those early season as well. I kind of mix them in and out. But I like to wrench on my laces, and I had one of those lace hooks pop out. And I've never got it fixed, but it's just, I don't know. It's the boot overall works very well. The Danner, that boot does, that Pronghorn boot. I've worn it. I wore that boot on my very first elk hunt. And then I've worn it, you know, off and on with my early season, my crispies that I wear now. So it's kind of a dependence if it's wet or where I'm going. I'll kind of, cause that boot is insulated really lightly. So if it's a real warm early season hunt, I'll wear my crispies. If it's that mid October where it starts to get cool, I'll wear the Pronghorns. And then when it gets cold, then I'll wear the Alpha Burley Pros. But for a hiking boot, I guess that's kind of what I'm looking for. Now, kind of going into the late season where you want something with a lot of insulation, or you can find that combination. Cause I know guys who wear their hiking boot all winter long, but they have a bigger size in it. So it allows them to pack maybe a real thick sock in there as well. And I've never really found that happy medium yet to where I can get a boot paired with a really good sock that just keeps me warm. I haven't found that yet. I'm still playing that game, but when it gets, you know, I'm throwing the Alpha Burleys on. And so I'm looking for something that's just basically well insulated and well built. It's almost like at this point, the brand does matter. I'm looking for a company that's been out for a really long time. I'm looking for a company that has a history of making a good boot. I'm looking for reviews. And then I'm just seeing what other people have to say about these bigger rubber boots. And that's kind of where I lean.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Yeah, I think Browning, Lacrosse, Irish Setter, kind of probably just depends on fit for you. If you're looking for like a knee high option,
Muck boots now, like, you know, I had these chore boots or these farm boots, but now Muck boots in the past couple of years, I think past 5 years, they've upgraded and they've got several options. So that's another boot, that you might want to look into for a cold weather. What other brands can you think of?
There's Boggs, B-O-G-S, Boggs, right. Anything that I've ever worn that was by them. And it's only been work related, because they're like a knockoff of a Muck boot. They're like a knockoff of that chore steel toe Muck boot.
Right.
Those are not comfortable, and they fall apart very easily from what we've seen on a lot of our job sites. So our company actually won't even buy those for our employees anymore.
Gotcha.
The Boggs. So they stick with the Muck boots.
Okay.
Cause yeah, Muck makes that chore steel toe. So that's what, and then they make another insulated steel toe, which no one's going to wear a steel toe, hunting. I understand that. It's just, that's the only experience I have with them is the steel toe versions. But yeah, it's like the Muck Arctic Pro. Those are super warm. I've never worn them hunting, but I have worn them for work. And even with the steel toe out in the wintertime, feet have stayed plenty warm.
Gotcha.
And that's just with a pair of cotton socks, you know, just your typical work socks, like, oh crap, got to go do something outside for the next 3 hours. And you slap on your heavy duty boots and feet stay plenty warm in them. So it's a positive for the muck boots. I don't know. I don't know that there is a way for knee-high boots to not crack where your toe bends, you know, where your toe bends on that rubber boot. I think that's anytime I've had a pair of knee-high rubber boots fail me, it's been in that spot.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And for me, like I'm only wearing that rubber boot walking from my truck to my tree stand and back. Right. It's not like I'm hanging out in them. So.
Right. Right.
I guess I've seen that in my muck boot, but I didn't use my muck boots the same as I use my Alpha Burley Pros, right? I'm using my Alpha Burley Pros specific for cold weather hunting. I'm not using them typically to go shed hunting, maybe a couple times. I was using my muck boots because my shoe size is 11 or an 11 and a half, depending on, you know, what boot, but I got my Alpha Burley Pros in a 12. So that way I could pack a bigger sock into it, you know, more socks if I needed to. I can wear a heavy wool sock and that makes up the space in there. Now my Crispies are 11 and a halfs and they fit great. And my mucks, I think were an 11 and a half as well. So I couldn't get away with packing. I mean, I still could, but I forced, you know, it's a little tighter of a fit for my muck boots, but I would use my muck boots to do a lot of shed hunting. So I definitely saw the wear and tear on the muck boots that I'm not seeing on the Alpha Burley Pros. And that's strictly because the application and how I'm using them. Right.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I'm right there with you. The Alpha Burleys that I have, I wear size 12 across the board. My hiking boots, always a size 12. Work boots, tennis shoes, anything, size 12. The Alpha Burleys, those, any knee-high boot that I wear for like the insulated knee-high boot, whether it's lacrosse, mm-hmm. Irish setter, whatever, I've always wear a 13. That way I can put that big, heavy wool sock in there. And like you said, it tightens everything right up.
Right. Absolutely, dude. Well, we're coming up on the end here. Anything else about boots that you'd like to share? Tips, tricks? I know for me, I'm getting ready to, I probably don't need to do it, but I'm going to do it just for peace of mind. I'm going to wash my Crispies before my elk hunt, and then I'm going to probably apply another layer of waterproofing to them. Like you can buy the sprays. Just to, I don't know, you know, because just like a tent or anything, right? That waterproofing over time may crack or have a leak in it. And I'm not saying that it does, but I would love to have that additional peace of mind because I don't want to go up in the mountain and, like you said, have a wet boot that just complete, because a boot doesn't dry out in 4 hours, 8 hours. Unless you got some kind of fire or one of those boot dryers. And without electricity up in the mountains, I don't have the opportunity for a boot dryer. So, you know, I don't want any wet feet.
Yeah. The only tips I have, it goes right along with drying your boots out. If you're Western hunting, the only way that I've ever found to truly dry your boots out is if you're doing what we call nooning, where you're just laying on top of a mountain, taking a midday nap because there's nothing going on.
Yeah.
Kick your boots off and let them dry out in the sun if you have that option. And then this fall with my knee highs, I noticed that by actually bringing them inside and putting them in front of a register every single night and making sure they're completely dry, when I put them on in the morning, that helped out a lot. Drying them out every single night when you're in that November week long, 10 day long rut hunt.
Right.
And, you know, you're just, especially if you're out on some bigger farms and, you know, you got, you know, a half mile, 3/4 mile walk. Yeah. Your feet can definitely work up a pretty good sweat. So just dry your boots out as much as possible.
Good deal. Good deal. So do you think that was a good conversation on boots?
I do.
Cool.
I do.
Cool. And like always, guys, for you guys who are listening, you know, when I post this on the Sportsman's Nation Facebook page or on Instagram or on the Nine Finger Chronicles page, I want to hear your guys' thoughts. I would, you know, if you think that we're just a bunch of dipshits, tell us we're a bunch of dipshits and then give some reasoning. I mean, I don't want to see a comment that just says, hey, you're a dipshit, period, because I get that from my buddies already. But what I would like is, hey, you're a dipshit because, and then talk to us about your experiences, share your guys' thoughts on boots, maybe boot and sock combinations, because we're always learning here as well. And, you know, we don't want what we're saying to be gospel. I want this to be an interactive community to talk about gear. And the reason for that is because, you know, a lot of people make purchasing decisions based off of what other people tell them. And I don't want someone to, you know, say, hey, well, this guy wears this, so I need to buy that. I want everybody to do their research. And I think this is a great, I don't know, opportunity to do that. What do you say, Bob?
Hey, I'm right there with you. Like I said, my wife tells me I'm a dipshit all the time. So, no, just it's a community. There's enough on social media that pulls hunters away from each other, and this is a great place where we can all come together and share ideas. So,
absolutely.
That's what this podcast is for.
Cool.
Making everybody's hunt better and making everyone's purchases more sound.
Yeah, that's a great way to end it. Bob, have a good rest of your week and a good weekend. And everybody else, hopefully you enjoyed this. Please go subscribe to the Hunting Gear Podcast on iTunes or wherever you download this. It's also on the Sportsman's Nation Big Game and Whitetail feeds as well. So you can download it there and get all the content, or you can download it by itself with the Hunting Gear Podcast standalone feed. Hopefully that makes sense. Go to the Sportsman's Nation website, sportsmansnation.com, for a ton of other great content that's more strategy related. And good luck to everybody this upcoming season. And we're gonna continue to try to put these out on a weekly basis. And at the same time, I know I've said this in previous, scheduling the manufacturers to come on and talk about some of this stuff is difficult. So my goal originally was to have the podcast where me and Bob talk, and then the podcast where I have the manufacturers from some of these boots and products on afterwards, a representative from the companies. And I'm finding that it's difficult because this time of year, especially, is the buying season. So everybody within the company or the organization is really busy. There's that. And then if you guys have a recommendation of a category that you want us to cover or talk about, send me a DM through Instagram or through Facebook, and we'll make it happen. So until next time, guys, have a good one.